Spencer. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yes, it was a surprise to see him, but what was more of a surprise was to see jockey Paul Townend stay aboard when the horse kind of tried to go through an open ditch instead of over it. And fortunately, the rider and the horse partnership remained intact, and the horse went on to win very well. I'm not certain what he beat in that 2.5 mile chase, but at the same token, he did win that debut over the surface. I'm sorry, over that obstacle. Very, very well, and did what was expected. You know, he won his first 11 races earlier this decade, and 14 of his first 15, and his nickname is Faheem the Machine. So he's kind of been one of those star horses that just stands the test of time and has been, you know, widely admired, not only in England and in Ireland, but also over here by us. And it's going to be fascinating to see what he can do this winter at an advanced age. There's a lot of nice, much younger, 2.5 mile chasers that would be very competitive for him, but he is probably the most overqualified novice chaser in one of the in recent memory. So it's going to be fun to watch what he can do. You know, he's like, as mentioned, he's going to be 12 in a few weeks' time. That seems preposterous to American flat racing fans, and understandably so. But over there, it is pushing it a little bit for that age group, but nonetheless, it is still remarkable. I can tell you that in 1997, when I first went to Cheltenham, I saw Earth Mover win at the age of 7, and then 6 years later, I watched him win again at that track at the age of 13. So, you know, keep your programs, folks. So you might see those horses again. It's that type of sport.
Well, and you know, this performance last week, and I'm glad that I had the chance to visit with you, and I probably should have brought it up yesterday with Tommy Skiffington, but I've had it in the corner of my notes all week, and you know, the idea of him coming back at all was met with all kinds of catcalls and you know, some of the predictable you know, concerns, but if you haven't seen it, pull it up, and he was terrific. And explain, Steve, also the difference. You know, the fact that he's a novice chaser, and that Willie Mullins said that, you know, he sees him as being ideal for this. I mean, it's a change of, as he ages, it's a change of demand on a horse going from the hurdles to the chase.
You know, the hurdle races are 2 to 3 miles. And they're over smaller obstacles that can actually be kicked over if, you know, you don't want to, because it's going to interrupt your momentum, but they can be kicked over, and there are fewer of them in a race. So there's more emphasis on speed in those races. Whereas with chasing, they're anywhere from 2 miles to largely 3.25, 3.5 miles for those races. The Grand National's 4 miles, but there aren't very many of those anymore. So with the chasing, you know, the emphasis is on jumping. The you know, the obstacles are much, much more stern, and there are a variety of them. You have just standard fences. You have open ditches where there's a bit of a gap before the horse actually takes off, and then there's some other novelty things like water jumps or something, which are lower fences, but, you know, are emphasizing a longer leap. So there's a variety in there, and the horses have to be a little smarter, and jockeys have to be a lot better too, I think, to be able to work with a horse to get him around there safely for 2 and 3 miles, and do so against very good competition in a lot of these races. So, you know, it's interesting to see an older horse, an 11-year-old, you know, asked to change the code, so to speak. And if he can do so, I think it's going to make for a very interesting winter. And, you know, the next 16 weeks between now and Cheltenham will be, you know, he'll be one of the things. What's he going to run in? He'll probably run around Christmas time, which is typical of horses being prepared for top-class races in Ireland, because even though there are some nice races in the interim, considering he just ran on November 16th, you know, that's a good timeline. I was at Cheltenham last weekend, and the race was on the large screen video board of the paddock, and I had my back turned, actually, because I was looking at it, but I was also trying to, you know, the winner's circle was about to take place for one of the Cheltenham races, and there was this audible gasp when he almost fell. I think it was 7 fences out, and I turned around and saw him recover. I didn't see the actual faulty jump until a replay, but it was an interesting moment because this gasp went up. You just hear this audible noise. Oh, did he tip over? No, he almost did, but he's still going. So let's see what he can do. He's got, like I said, he's got a lot of good competition he's got to face over the next several months to reach the top before the the big springtime festivals are held at Cheltenham and then Aintree in England and then back at Punchestown at the end of April.
Steve Anderson, folks, joining us from the Daily Racing Forum, and Steve is among the North American media, the biggest fan of the jump scene internationally, and never misses or rarely misses trips to Cheltenham. And I wasn't going to miss a chance to bring up Faheen with you. Steve, we've got to talk about yesterday's lengthy and fairly fascinating CHRB meeting, and you had the distinction and the honor of covering it for the forum, and I'm sure Matt Hegarty was very appreciative.
Yes, I think he was. So was Jake Fisher, but no. No, I was there, and it's part of the job description, so that's cool. It was a fascinating meeting in the sense that it covered a wide range of topics that are pertinent to California racing this year. And, you know, there's been a change at the top of the racing board. Veterinarian Greg Ferraro has taken over the chairmanship from Chuck Winter, whose term expired earlier this year. And Ferraro is a well-known figure in racing. He was a practicing vet, as recently as the early 2000s. Late 90s and early in Southern California, and has had a leadership role at UC Davis's veterinarian school in the interim. So he's got a long resume of involvement in the sport and an understanding of the game as well. And he's very much taken the tack that there will be lot less elimination of medications in the California racing, which may be just the trend that's going to take place nationally with this new coalition announced earlier this week too. So there are changes that are coming in California first that over time might evolve into other major racing jurisdictions across the country too.
Talk about the some of the broad points of discussion, because quite a few things that people expected to see action and see votes taken and agendas forwarded were actually tabled. What was accomplished? What was delayed? And let's start there.
Okay. The restriction on the use of whips is probably the most prominent issue that was not decided, voted upon, or expanded on in discussion on Thursday. That has been postponed until December 12th at Los Alamitos' meeting, which is the next racing board meeting. Oscar Gonzalez, who is now the new vice chairman of the Racing Board, asked for a postponement owing to the existence of the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition and try to get those organizations and that group to be fully versed on what California has in mind, Gonzalez said. He said he wants to try to make sure that they understand. Basically, they're going to eliminate the use of the whip in the way we know it. Jockeys will not be able to reach back and strike a horse on its in the manner in a four-handed manner that they do. They will be able to hit a horse, tap it on its shoulder while always holding the reins against the neck. So that's going to be completely different from what we've seen. They can show the horse the whip, as you do sometimes when you put it out in front of aside their face. That will be allowed. If there's a violation, the horse would be disqualified. So we're all in it, so to speak, in the sense that if you own a horse, train a horse, or bet on or watch a horse, you can see the order of change altered. That's the discretion of the stewards in the cases under the proposed rules that have not been approved but are being discussed. So that's one of the major changes. Before the when it was first discussed in the spring, the initial rule was that the result would stand, but that the jockey would lose his or her portion of the prize money. Well, that had a flaw legally, Rick Baedeker, the executive director, said in conversation yesterday. So jockeys will still be able to use their whips to control the horse for safety. There's still an emphasis there. But the idea of the current model, which is that a jockey can strike a horse up to three times before allowing that horse to respond to the urging and then doing it again, that rule will be dismissed, and jockeys will not be able to do that in California. And changes are going to be profound. You're going to see a lot more horsemanship if this rule goes through as recommended. And you're also going to see massive changes in quarter horse racing, where the whip is used 5-6 strides out of the gate, if that late. So there's a lot of changes coming in the way racing looks in California if these whip rules go into place.
How much discussion, how much debate was there on the topic, or did they just delay everything and they'll hash it out when the vote, you know, time comes to vote?
I think that conversation is on December 12th because it was so quickly suggested to table the motion on Thursday that the people who had come out to discuss it, argue for it, argue against it, weren't given a chance to respond, and that was met with a chorus of reaction, and also the rapid departure of two television cameras, who lost their story, and lost their main story because I think they came in expecting the racing board to be the first to ban the use of whips at states, and that didn't happen yesterday. Will it happen next month? Probably, but it's hard to tell. We have to wait and see kind of what the tone of the conversation is like, and issues such as that. But it's definitely in the system of change. And it will take time. It's probably, if you had to put a timeline on it, just to give it an educated guess, you're looking at nothing before next summer because the regulatory process in California takes so long. You've got to approve it, send it out for a period of public comment. The racing board looks at it again and then votes on it for a final issue, and then it's got to go to the government, state government of Office of Administrative Law for legal review. And every once in a while, when a law is proposed by the racing board to the government, it comes back with a setback, and it's not implemented. So assuming that it goes through, you can see how easily that becomes a months-long process.
Well, we'll wait for that, for those next steps to unfold. Talk a little bit about the date discussions, and it's a little late in November for there not to be a stake schedule offered for Santa Anita. Steve, what is the status there?
It has not been announced, and there was a proposed version of it in the racing board's documents that were presented in conjunction with the racetrack's application for the racing season, and there will be no hillside turf spreads. The only hillside races will be the start of lengthy turf races, for example. So all turf sprints at Santa Anita at this point are 5 and 5.5 furlongs on the main track, on the main turf course oval. So the hillside races are gone for now. They've said at times, officials have said at times, that they're considering putting them back on. But yesterday, Aiden Butler, who's the acting executive director of the Stronics Group's California tracks, said no, that there's no intent to bring that back at this point. So there have been a couple years in the past where it's been about this week when they've announced the stake schedule, but quite often it was usually done in the early part of November at the latest. And, you know, that's not helpful, really, for the general sport. However, I think in a lot of cases, if a person has a certain horse and they just want to confirm a date, they can go into the racing office and say, listen, I need to make sure that such and such race is going to be on X date because I'm training for it. And it's not that far off, you know. It's 5 weeks,
yeah.
So
yeah,
it's time to get the advertisements out. Put it that way.
Was Craig Fravel on hand
in attendance, but did not speak publicly?
Okay, all right. I was curious.
But when the Santa Anita issue came forward, two of their executives, including Butler, were the ones that presented their discussions to the racing board.
Very good. What other elements? I mean, the thing was, it was a long. How long did it go?
I don't remember. It was too long. I think it was 4.5. It was an hour-long break in the middle, so that was different.
Okay.
I think it was probably like 4.5 hours. But there were 27, 28 items. Now, some of them were sloughed off to next month, like I mentioned. But, you know, they didn't have a meeting. The racing board did not have a meeting in October, so some things that would have been done last month were put off till yesterday. So that made it a little longer than normal. It's hard to believe that there were times in the 1990s that there were 45 and 60-minute racing board meetings, but that didn't happen yesterday. One of the other things that come up is you know, there will be some canceled days at Santa Anita this year under rainy conditions. It's just not certain really what protocols we put in place to determine how much rain is too much rain. You know, it have a lot to do with the conditions of the racetrack as the day unfolds, how much weather is expected during the performance of the card itself. and other factors, but there was discussions during Sandita's license application that when there are wet conditions, we'll just plan on going home. You know, the idea of an all day long just sea of slop and a sealed racetrack, those are going by the wayside. You know, so if California has another wet winter like it did in 2018-2019 during that season, they may have significantly fewer racing days depending on during the January-February period, just depending on weather conditions. And then there's been times in the past when during that same 2 months, it barely rains at all and the state gets stuck in a drought. So, you know, Del Mar didn't run yesterday. They elected to not take entries for that program last weekend because they projected that they would get rain, and that area did get more than an inch of rain on Wednesday and early Thursday. With a lot of standing water in the parking lot at Del Mar yesterday. So
yeah.
perhaps that was the right call in so much as it would have been an all-dirt program, as is today's, and it might not have been very very much of a good-looking program. You know, the mentality of racing is we just go forward no matter what. And, you know, unless the weather is just atrocious or dangerous, you know, the sport goes forward. But that age-old mentality seems to be changing, particularly in California.
Well, certainly someone like Dr. Ferraro, I would think, Steve, to some degree, given the concerns about Governor Newsom engineering a wholesale takeover of CHRB, Ferraro feels like an individual that will have the respect and you know have a working relationship, an approachable relationship. It seems like a pretty prudent choice given the situation.
And let's see how that plays out over time. I agree. You know, there'll be tests immediately in regards to, you know, the weather conditions at Santa Anita, the issues related to field sizes and the number of available horses in this circuit, which is down from last year and might fall further over the winter, depending on the number of people that base here and or others that might be attracted to racing, such as at Oaklawn Park. So there's a lot of issues on the horizon other than horse safety that will affect California's performances and product that the racing looks like, you know, whether that appeals to bettors nationwide or just to people who like to come to Santa Anita because of its, you know, its view and its you know, it's aesthetics. So there's a lot of things going on in the state that lead into that. And Ferraro will be at the front of that as, you know, executive directorship is a volunteered position and a full-time job at the same time.
Steve Anderson, the only other thing I've got to ask, are we having a, I haven't checked the calendar, do we have a Futurity Starlet champion to champions doubleheader?
No. Let's see here. Let me see. We got the trials for the Los Alamitos 2 Million Futurity are Sunday night. There are 12 of them. And then those two events are on different weekends this year. The big thoroughbred races, the Starlet and the Los Al Futurity, are on the 7th. And then the big quarter horse weekend is the 13th through 15th at Los Al, with Southern Cal Derby on Friday, the Champion of Champions on Saturday. And Flash and Roll is in that because she won the Super Derby against, she'll go against older horses for the first time. Lovely filly. And then on Sunday, the 15th, is the 2 Million Futurity, which will be Ed Burghardt's final call.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's going to retire after a 40-year involvement at Los Al in various capacities and as an announcer for more than 35 years. And Mike Rona will replace him at the end of December. And but Burghardt's retiring at the end of this meeting as the race caller, and that is December 15th. So that's the 2 Million Futurity night. So it should be quite good. We'll find out on Sunday night this weekend who has qualified 10 fastest times from 12 trials. So that is kind of a different. It's kind of a fun way to spend Sunday night keeping up with the trial races.
Absolutely, and we'll get Ed on before. That weekend, and of course, Ed, somewhat of a Hyman Roth retirement. You know, he's been retiring from the same job for 7 or 8 years, right? He threatened to retire about 5 years ago.
Yeah, and then he said he was going to do it 2 years ago, and Doc Allred, the track owner, talked him out of it for another year, and I think this is going to be the final call next month. And then, but I think he's going to stay involved as a winemaker because he likes to keep up with the racing. So he'll have a role in the game. He just won't be the voice of the racetrack. So that'll be a change. But it's going to be fun to send him off into retirement, and he'll be missed because he's one of the most iconic voices in racing in the United States. A little bit underrated, and certainly the voice of quarter horses in this country.
Very much so, we'll talk to Ed before he calls it quits. Steve, this was wonderful. I greatly appreciate it, and I will see you. Right, I'll see you at the Starlet and Futurity.
Should be good racing out there those weeks coming into the fall meet there at Los El for 2 weeks, and that's usually a meet that does pretty well in terms of fields it has in the past, and if the weather remains cooperative, it should be a good little short little meet and one to look forward to.
Absolutely, and always looking forward to a chance to visit with Steve Anderson, who does such a tremendous job for the Daily Racing Forum. Steve, have a terrific Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it. Thanks again.
Steve Anderson with coverage not just of the CHRB meeting, but also Farheen with his exploit at the almost age of 12. Amazing. And I knew that Steve would love talking about that. And I have really come to enjoy that Los Al weekend. And Rick Hammerly standing by already. There we go. Perfect. The Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We're back. We're back in the old spot, cleanup spot for the week. Love it.
Well, you've got some. I think some kind of a treat for everybody. So we'll fold in ahead of the symposium. We'll also fold in a little student visit. But first of all, catch us up on the week for you.
Well, I'm going through a little eye problem that not quite as bad as yours. Pretty funny. Someone actually sat on my glasses, and those of us that have glasses know that sickening sound. And I said, no big deal. I got a spare pair, but my spare pair is like a millionth of a something off of the normal pair, and I've been like, the room spinning, vertigo, the whole deal. So I'm actually driving home tomorrow to get my spare pair, long story. But now I found my old one, and I'm taped up like Buddy Holly. And I feel a lot better. But I had a laugh. First thing, it's like an eye deal. But you know what? What's kind of wild, it's almost been 1 year that I made my departure from Santa Anita. Unceremoniously kicked out the door. But it's hard to believe that it's been a year already. And a lot of things happened between then and now. And to tell you the truth, it's been fantastic, to tell you the truth. And, who'd have thought that a year later, after a lot of travels and things, that I'd be back in Tucson, Arizona, helping students on the way like I was. So it's very cool, and it's been a great year. I've been all over the place, as you know, from some of the shows, but it's kind of neat to end up here. And, time flies when you're having fun. I can say that. So I've actually had some fun. And I want a couple things that I made some notes on earlier. I love, and I know I'm not the only one, love hearing from these players, the contest players. And not just hearing from them, but hearing how they make decisions on the fly and during the contest, and having Dick's basically telling you everything that he did and was going through his mind, and just listening to Brad here a little bit ago, and I've concluded these guys are just like me, they just got más huevos, that's all, they send it in when they got an opinion. A lot better than most of us do. So it's great, and I think this is what the contests have done out there. It creates a lot of camaraderie and a lot of cool stories that people can tell. I'm actually going to plan on playing in one here not too long in the distant future, because I enjoy the I enjoy that part of it. So it's actually really cool to hear everybody talk about it and talk about how they bet. I think that's more interesting than anything. And that was cool. And one couple more things that I noticed. You had a Howard Stern moment earlier in the week with you know what I'm talking about. Howard in the 90s, when he was a little bit crazy and was married to his first wife, Allison, she would somehow once in a while get through Baba Booey onto the phone, and he wouldn't really know it, and then he would get a little upset. But Tina called the other day, and I think caught you off guard, and it was pretty cool because I think the audience recognized her voice first before you did, and it was a good little exchange wishing you a happy birthday and all. But I immediately thought of Howard way back when Allison used to call, and then he used to, yell at her. Anyway, it was very, very, very cool, because you're the Howard Stern of the new century here, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a pretty good parallel, because in fact, I at first part of it was Deja, being mysterious about. She just said, "You've got a surprise call, and I think you should take it." And I'm like, sometimes you don't know. We've had the moments where that it wasn't such a great idea.
Where it doesn't turn out so well. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
That was good. So, and I wanted to say something. You had that really caught my ear, and it's kind of a weird deal. You had Dick Powell on the other day, which you have Dick on all the time, and he's great to listen to. And lately, he's been doing his Asian report, whether he's in Japan or Hong Kong, and doing that. So I have it on, and I don't play that too often, although I have been playing a little bit at night, I got to admit. Gets lonely out here in the desert. But anyway, you guys start talking about the new coalition and kind of went off key a little bit, and they're talking about the leadership and this and that. And Dick made a comment that I don't know if it hit, but it hit me. And he made something about a comment. He brought up Brian McGrath, who was one of the early, quote, commissioners, and he came and left and never heard from him again. And they brought up Tim Smith, and he came and left and didn't hear from him again. And he made some – I tried to get to the replay this morning, but I couldn't get it. But he made some comment that, if he went away, we'd find him showing up somewhere because, that's what he does. He's a racetracker. And it just hit me like, wow. Of course, I want a racetracker leading me. I don't want some guy that comes in and he's won and he's done and he's gone and you never hear from him again. And as I think of some of the leaders that we've had over the years, locally, certain places, that who are these people that show up to lead and they go away and you never hear from them again? I'm thinking, well, why were these people there in the first place? And it just kind of hit me. I've been through a few of those in my time. And, as we go into maybe some new leadership opportunities here for the game with a, not necessarily a commissioner, maybe a commission or some type of leadership group, I don't want some one-and-done guy. I want somebody that's gotten dirty in this game before and that's been around, that, left a few places and going to show up because that's his life or that's his, her life is mm-hmm. racing. So it hit me because I've been through a lot of these one, done, fired, out, gone guys that you never hear from again. And anyway, I don't know if it just struck me as like, wow, let's not do this again and just have a so-called suit come in and he's going to be our leader. And it's like, who is this guy? And anyway, so I thank Dick for like getting me fired up for that. And I hope that we as a group, as an industry, decide on some people that are racetrackers that are into the game and this is what they do, and I think better decisions can be made that way.
Well, just by what I just said minutes ago to Steve Anderson regarding somebody like a Dr. Ferraro, I think that had to be somewhat a concern going in as to what was going to happen with CHRB, and we'd had that the last couple of weeks we were having that discussion. I brought it up with Alan Foreman. How do you approach that question about people that don't that aren't going to have conflicts of interest, but know enough about the game and have had experience so that they can really understand the core issues. I mean, and that's a challenge. And each jurisdiction has handled it, you know, differently. Historically in New York, it's, you know, been a political football a lot of times, and it's created, you know, negative adversarial kinds of scenarios. So I certainly understand that, I brought it up too with Dick that historically you've gotten different kinds of people from outside the industry depending on what the perceived immediate needs of the industry were at the time.
Exactly, and then Steve came on and he talked about the CHRB meeting. I missed a little bit of his talk, and it was a little bit like a town hall assembly gone awry at some point in there. I know there was a lot of people looking for some direction to come out of there. I don't know if they found it. I do agree that Dr. Ferraro is probably a good choice because he does have the background in the game, and he's not someone that was just appointed from, you know, director of, Ford Motor Company type of guy. So I think that'll be good. And I'm sitting here with Alex Sostel, one of our students here, and he was listening as well. Like I said, I don't know why, especially tomorrow's meeting, they couldn't have had a technical difficulty and just pulled the plug, because, you know, the world doesn't need to know all this stuff. I mean, with the people getting up with the comments, you know, kind of out of order, there was a little, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of decorum during the meeting, and it just doesn't need to be aired out for the world to hear. But it was, and there's a new leader in the CHRB. And a lot of things got tabled, and I'm glad that a couple things did get tabled. They're waiting for the new coalition to form some rules. I don't think that's going to happen overnight either. But there's some people looking for stability in California right now, as witnessed by some of the guys that are leaving. You brought up Joe Talamo. When I was in Hot Springs last week, I had heard that he was coming to Oakland, and I was asked not to say anything, which obviously I didn't. And then Joe called the other day, and we were talking about some things. And, I said, hey, I got an extra room if you need to settle in until you get ready. And he goes, no, we're bringing the whole family. We're moving. So, like Marty said, he's moving. They're moving back to the Kentucky area. They got family there, of course. But, he mentioned a few things in the forum, more opportunity and bigger prices, bigger purses to run for, and he's making a move, and there might be a few others after him. I don't know if they got the stability they're looking for right now. I mean, everyone wants to see California survive, whether it's going to survive in the form that it's been, but it's been a quick year in a lot of ways and not necessarily good. But let's talk about some good stuff here. Like I said, I've got Alex here. He's one of the many capable students here. He's a senior and is very enthusiastic. In fact, you said you might have had him on the radio with you last
year. We did, sure.
He was at the Breeders' Cup. But I'll tell you, the thing that got me was early on, my first or second week here, he told me he's going to miss class for something. I said, no, you got to be kidding me. I said, what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm making a run out to Santa Anita. I said, you know what? That's all right. And he goes, then I'm going to Los Al that night. And I go, you know what? Very good. You're in. So if that's not a good excuse to miss school, I don't know what is. So there's no better. So here's Alex. And I told you, I actually needed him here just for proof that I actually am here, doing what I said I was doing. So, but anyway, here's Alex, a very good representative of the students here, and you can see why there's so many RTI alumni out there, because when you leave here, if you want to put the time in here, you're going to put the time in out there and make for. I mean, he's going to be whatever organization he ends up in, he's going to be a good addition. So say hi to Alex, everybody.
Steve, first off, thanks for having me on the show. Really nice to be with you guys. And yes, I am here as
A guest. This is very nice, but also I am proof. Yes, Rick is in Arizona. He is here in Tucson with us.
And how tough is he grading? When it comes to the nuts and bolts of his professorship.
It's been great having him so far. I'm sure he's grading a little tougher with me, of course. But no, it's been great. I've been learning a ton from the different classes, and just getting a different perspective on everything has been wonderful. I know for him personally, he's had to really teach a lot of the students in our racing office class this matrix, as we do. And it's one of the, as far as the being a racetrack program student, when you come in, it's like you hear the stories about this matrix, and it's an interesting project. It scares a lot of people, but we get through it.
we spoke, of course, last year, and you spent all the Breeders' Cup right around the winner's circle and on the track apron. Has anything changed in your what you're hoping to do when you wrap up, when you graduate?
Well, things have been, it's been back and forth and really trying to figure everything out. The next thing I'm really planning on doing is really stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit and spending some time out in Lexington getting some hands-on experience. Something that I just have never really had the opportunity to do and was never really around it. But I think it's important, especially getting into this industry, to have handled with both sides of this industry, really. And it will be different for sure, but I've started learning a lot this semester just being out here, which has been a really nice stepping stone, really getting into it. And moving to Lexington and spending some time there will make what I think will make a huge difference.
Well, you know, yeah.
I was going to say, Alec brings up a point. When I came through here, I was a little bit older. And when I left here, I knew that was one thing that I didn't know, and that was literally working around the horse, working in the barn area, and understanding that part of the game. And for me, I go, you know what? I think I got to go now. I don't have time to do this. But that's what the school offers, some opportunities to get an opening in that. And that was one of my biggest regrets, that I didn't really, maybe I should have taken a semester off and gone to work with for somebody, you know, mucking out stalls and doing whatever they do back there. And learning, because when people come in with trainers now come in with their problems and they talk about that stuff, I mean I don't know. I don't know enough to comment on it. When I worked with Bobby Umphrey back in the day, obviously he knew that stuff, and they would come in and he was able to converse on that level with them, which I miss. So that Alex is gonna take some time to do that is a great way. I mean, you learn it all when you can. Do it while you're young.
Yeah, and it's not unusual. I mean, in the all the years that we've had conversations with students, it's intriguing that they might come to Arizona with one thing in mind. We'll discuss this more, at symposium next month. But many times you start to delve into the area, and then some other area of the industry, catches your interest and ends up being, the direction you go. And undoubtedly, that's the case, Alex. You've got to have, plenty of friends that have had that experience.
Well, it's interesting, and it's one thing that I've realized a lot more this semester as I've really tried to broaden my perspective on the industry and learn more about it, is just being around different students here. We all pretty much have a different focus. I mean, some have similars, but we have certain people who are very into the breeding aspect of the industry, some that are really into the races and the racing aspect of the industry, people that want to be trainers, people that want to go, just in so many different avenues of this industry. And especially for me personally, I want to have the knowledge and some of the experience in all of these different parts. So to be able to kind of learn from them, I mean, I'll use one of my specific students in general, Jacob Shepherd, who's very, very well versed in breeding and all the sales aspects of everything. And he has really taken the time to really converse with me, learning about a lot of that stuff, as well as we're really helping each other learn a lot about the international racing and getting into Australia, Europe, Japan, different countries like that. And I feel that since I've started really conversing with some of the students on what they know, I've learned a lot about it. And especially going off of the horsemanship stuff,
we do have some students here that grew up doing that, and they've been, see, they have that knowledge that I don't yet, where I grew up with a, I mean, my family was a basketball family, and that's what I grew up with. So getting into this, being able to kind of just talk with them back and forth and figure out different things and have them show me something has just made a huge difference, really, going forward the whole semester.
Well, and we should tell everybody we're going to run out of time. We'll see you in just a couple of weeks there. But tell everybody about, you know, you've got broadcast interest too, and you've got the show that you produce and bring out regularly. Tell everybody how to find it.
Well, it's called Off the Turf. It is a RTIP and student-run podcast that we do. It's up on the RTIP website at Off the Turf. It has its own little link up there, which I love. As well on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and different spots. Interviews with some of our students and a lot of our alumni, and just really promoting the racetrack program, because it has been an amazing program, and it's done wonders for me in my time out here, and to really get the name out there and to get to hear about our alumni from all these different places. And I'm getting on Rick. I'm gonna have Rick on within the next couple of weeks.
Oh, that's a good idea. It's a great idea.
If I'm not grading papers, I'll do it.
Listen to you. And, of course, I know a couple of weeks ago, you had Keith Doschel, who is doing a nice job, boy. Weeks into his tenure as the racing secretary for the aqueduct season, and it's been terrific. Obviously, Martin Panza, you know, looking over the shoulder, undoubtedly, but very excited for Keith, who I got to know, four years ago on one of the trips to Symposium. So pull up Alex's show, Off the Turf, RTIP, and you can follow. You've got the personal account too, because I just pulled it up.
Yep, we're up there. Yep, Keith. It's actually funny with Keith. We recorded, so I have to do my recordings that. Whatever time we can make the time, because he's busy, I'm busy. So we did it. Did the whole interview, had a problem with the audio, and had to redo it. So, but we got it on there, so it worked.
I love it. All right, Alex, we'll see you. We'll see you on Symposium Week, and happy Thanksgiving, Hammer. We'll talk to you next week, and we'll talk to everybody Monday. I want to thank Marty McGee and Nick Tamara.
I got one thing.
Real
Steve,
quick.
Bring back the hill. Bring back the hill.
Yeah, the hill. Yeah, it's Boot Hill, by the way they've handled it. Marty McGee and Nick. Brad Anderson with the extensive visit. Scully as well. And we didn't get to Jeff Siegel. Jeff got back to me late this morning. And Jay ended up in the car as well. He had late night Kings. Go Kings Go last night, but Hammer and Alex as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow at Aqueduct and talk to you on Monday morning. And, of course, you got HRRN coverage here at 3 o'clock and tomorrow down the stretch and Equine Forum and more. Talk to you Monday.